Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Today we're going to learn how a hefty dose of vitamin C can help fight the common cold. That's according to the University of Helsinki, which is in Finland, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. What does it mean if we're trying to get that vitamin C from our diet, like having a glass of orange juice or having an apple? We're not going to be able to do it. So I'll try to explain why it's so important to have a very healthy, clean, organic diet and supplement on top of that. We have about 10 studies on health and nutrition, and I always try to select those that you're not reading in the medical common lay journals also. It's not on most of the media. Why, I don't know, but we give it here. All good stuff. Then I'm going to have a little debate between Anderson Cooper and the former Representative Burton. Now, Burton was merely there to talk about why we need safer vaccines. He's pro-vaccine. But his son's son ended up with autism. He held hearings not once but twice. Beth Clay, who was his administrative assistant and oversaw all the hearings, I filmed, went to Washington, met with her, had an in-depth conversation for about 3 hours, and she told me how utterly impossible it was to get anything out of the CDC and FDA that wasn't biased, that they lied under oath. And she gave examples of that, and I put it in one of my films. And nothing ever happens to those officials. But tell the truth, no one wants to hear it. So here's a little debate. Now watch Anderson Cooper try to really, in his own smarly way, try to make it seem like this very respected legislator who focused a lot of energy on vaccines, more than any other legislator in American history, doesn't know what he's talking about. But we do know what we're talking about, and we will respond to Anderson Cooper with detailed peer-review cited scientific literature. Also, from Dr. Kenneth Stoller, medical doctor, he's going to give us a little education in vaccines do causing autism, ADD and ADHD, and brain damage. Then we're going to have Laura Logan, who was a multi-award-winning reporter for CBS, 16 Minutes. I'm not sure. I think it was 16 or 17 years. Then she fell off the radar. And now she's being interviewed by a person who, on some issues, I believe he's right, but on the vast majority, he and I share completely different points of view. So I don't allow a person's political or ideological reference to prevent me from sharing information I believe is valid. And it's not he that is valid in what he's saying. It's she that is valid in what she's saying. It's important to hear what she says because the media is extremely biased, both left and right. And I want you to hear from her because she's a very seasoned, top-of-the-rung reporter. So we have a lot to share. Now, at any time during our program today that you wish to call in, share a point of view, please feel free to do so. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Be happy to hear what you have to say. Also, you can watch all of our video clips by going to youtube.com/PRNFM, youtube.com/PRNFM. And if you want to download any show, please feel free to do so. Our archives are free. Call this number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. To hear this program Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday evening, the Progressive Commentary Hour, which is the most popular program I do during the week. It's always a very serious show. on an important topic, you will dial 774-337-6068. You should always have that number because you never know when a station is carrying this program for whatever reason, preemption, fund drive, something, doesn't carry the program, so you can always hear it live. 774-337-6068. Now, for a lot of people, when they're going from a change in seasons and it's abrupt, then their immune system is challenged. If they're under stress, if it's getting darker earlier, and yet at 5 o'clock it's dark, and they're still at work, there's a stress to that. It's different when it gets dark at 8 o'clock at night in the summertime, even a little later, and you have more time to be outside. Also, you could be in a toxic environment, in which case, if you're cooped up in an office all day long, or even in a home for that matter, depending upon the building materials used, particle board, carpets that hold all kinds of microorganisms that are not cleaned properly, then you're exposed to these, and that'll also create additional burdens upon your immune system. The sum total of these can be that you end up not being able to withstand the normal body responses to a pathogen, what we call an antigen, which could be the vitamin C, could be the virus, and then our solution is vitamin C, one of the solutions. Now, here's what a study just published in the journal Nutrients found: that vitamin C is the key to recovering from the symptoms of the common cold. The researchers from University of Helsinki in Finland discovered that a high dose, I'm suggesting 3,000 milligrams, they're suggesting 3,000 milligrams in one group and 6,000 milligrams in another group, and that the higher group had substantially less. In fact, there was even an 8,000 milligram against a placebo, and the 8,000 milligram reduced the duration by 19%. So that's important. So based upon how much vitamin C you take and a positive correlation between vitamin C and response is that somewhere between 4 to 8,000 milligrams a day for maintenance. Now, let's say that you said, okay, I don't want to take it in supplements. We'll just do the math. Let's say that an orange, and a large orange, contains 35 to 50 milligrams of vitamin C. Let's be optimistic and go 50. And let's say that we wanted 10 oranges. So that 50 oranges 50 milligrams times 10 oranges is going to give us 500 milligrams. Now just imagine that. You would have to eat 10 oranges to get what you need from that. But let's say we got 50 milligrams and we wanted to eat 100 oranges. All right? That gives us 5,000 milligrams. Well, who can eat 100 oranges? No one. Your teeth would rot. You would have too much acid in your body. So the idea from those so-called purists, oh, we can get all of our nutrients from our food. We can get vitamin E from having grains. You would have to have about a bushel basket of almonds to get the amount of vitamin E your body needs in a day. So there has to be some semblance of reasonableness. There are lines of vitamins that are made all naturally. So if you want to have a natural vitamin that mirrors your natural diet, that's fine. But understand you're dealing with doses that have to be higher because you're already infected. You're already sick. Your immune system is already in being challenged and it's collapsing. No different with a person with cancer. When I tell them what their diet should be and supplements and other things they have to do, that's a lot. Well, it may seem like a lot, but understand the cancer's a lot. How many cancer cells do you have? I don't know. Well, it took 20, 30, 40 years to develop that amount of cancer before you even can diagnose it as a cancer. By the time you diagnose, you're not the beginning of a disease, you're at the end of a disease. So you have to go beyond what is normal when it comes to fighting the common cold. Now, I also recommend echinacea, astragalus, the two very good herbs at 100 milligrams, bee propolis in its real form, which comes in a little jar and is very thick. It looks like a dark salve. It doesn't taste good, a little bitter, but boy, is it good for you. Also, olive leaf extract, eucalyptal silver, wild oregano oil, and vitamin D and vitamin A. You put all that together, and you take that with a good juice, with some lemon, green apple, and that's your best juice for alkalizing the body in the morning, and watch how you're able to deal with a cold. Now then, if you still have the symptoms of a cold or flu, I suggest you bake 3 large elephant squash. And then you bake them, you mash it up, put that into brown rice, and eat that. It's strong, but boy, there's nothing like sulfur to help get rid of a virus. Separately, a different study published in another peer-reviewed journal, the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine, a study from Northwestern University shows more evidence for vitamin C in the treatment of septic shock. That's important because when you can use something that's natural, non-toxic in the treatment of septic shock, which is a systematic response to infection that causes low blood pressure and organ failure, and the retrospective study included 43 children treated for septic shock with a steroid drug, hydrocortisone, and then 43 matching children with septic shock treated with hydrocortisone plus intravenous vitamin C and thiamine, which is vitamin B1, against the control group, and there was a 30% improvement in the one that received the vitamin C, and 9% drop in mortality or death. So, big difference with vitamin C. So the question is, was it the hydrocortisone or the vitamin C? Another study should have been just vitamin C, but they're not that bold yet. From the University of California, San Diego, algae is shown to improve gastrointestinal health. The project is the first to test green algae on symptoms related to human digestion. Now, a widespread, fast-growing plant, this algae is famous in scientific laboratories due to its position as the world's most exhaustively studied algae. For decades, the green single-cell organism, which primarily grows in wet soil, has served as a model species for research topics spanning from algae-based biofuels to plant evolution. But this one is shown it can do a lot of good for your intestine. So here's the general rule. You should have a sea vegetable 3 days a week. You can have it cold in a salad. And how you do that, you just make your, let's say, wakame, W-A-K-A-M-E, or kombu, K-O-M-B-U, or hijiki, H-I-J-I-K-I, hijiki. You cook them. It takes 5 minutes. Then you blanch them out with cold water, and you then allow the seaweed to be marinated. I like to marinate mine with a sweet relish that I make, and where I put manuka honey into a regular relish, and then I add in red pepper, put mustard seeds on top of that, and with some olive oil and lemon juice. And I let it sit overnight. Then I use that into a salad. It's delicious. By the way, if you want to surprise someone, hollow out an avocado. Do what I just suggested, but then blend that all with some sweet onion in a blender with the inside of an avocado. Now stuff all of that back into the avocado and serve chilled with a piece of mint on top. Something fun. Oh, and by the way, starting in 3 weeks, I'm going to work on a new cookbook, Healthy Vegan Chocolates. I already have about 150 recipes. It'll be fun. And it'll be done in the spring. So make sure that you're getting your sea vegetables, or you can have them hot in a miso soup. And if you want a light miso soup that doesn't have as much sodium, then use a barley miso soup. It's light, It's kind of yellowish, kind of sweet. And you can use shiitake mushrooms and the seaweed. And I also use shallots in there. It's delicious. Good for you. You can read more in the Journal of Functional Foods on this topic. Then we have research finds a link between joint hypermobility and increased risk of anxiety problems. This is University of London. Now, anxiety disorders are one of the most common mental health concerns in the United States. And according to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, these disorders affect about 40 million American adults. That's about 18% of the American population, and that's each year. And I do not believe that drugs should be used to treat any of these, nor electroconvulsive therapy, because they've never been shown to actually cure anyone. I believe that when a person is going through anxiety or depression, the best process is for a person to be on a holistic protocol, such as exercising twice a day aerobically, biking, working out in the gym, being around other people with a positive disposition, getting those natural feel-good endorphins moving, and that's what exercise does. And then help yourself by being with a holistic complementary therapist, one who uses tapping modalities, biofeedback, regressive hypnosis. All of these work. So, and this was published in Scientific Reports, there was a positive association between hip joint hypermobility and emotional arousal in this particular model, meaning the more anxious you are, the more likely it is that you will experience joint pain. And it's understandable because when you're in any form of hyper-emotional state, you're secreting more cortisol, and cortisol is highly inflammatory. So that's the connection. Social isolation results in memory loss in later life. The London School of Economics, published in the Journal of Gerontology. Now, we are a society that unfortunately has, for many, not everyone, lost the importance of connecting in throughout life to an extended family, especially as a person gets older. We don't encourage our children to interface with the older people. Children don't want to. They think they've had their day, they're corny, they're out of touch, they don't know how to use computers and social network, and therefore, how could they possibly communicate with them? And that's so unfortunate. Because these are the wise men and women of our society. They've lived a whole life. They have a lot of experience and a lot of looking back, and they can help people. So what happens is people begin to live alone. This social isolation contributes to memory loss, depression, suicide. And so it's very important that we start doing more to bring people together. I remember in my hometown, the big thing on once a week was a covered dish dinner. Mainly the churches did it. And people would get together and they'd socialize. But what was going on was a separate silent dialogue behind the scenes. The pastor would be talking with my mother, who was the secretary of the First Christian Church for like 27 years. And my mother would talk about who's got some problems. This kid over there is having problems since his father's an alcoholic. And so then there would be a meeting with the school teacher and with other people to try to work with the kid so that what he was experiencing didn't impact his academic standing and in his life. Someone else might be poor, so if the person needed something, if they needed some plumbing work or roofing work or painting or whatever it is, there'd be a group of people from the church that would go to that person and help them. Wouldn't be in any newspapers. It was all done very quietly. But the church was very important as a social safety net, more so than the government, neither the state, local, or federal government. It's unfortunate today that people mock and ridicule anyone who has faith. They consider them superstitious, and ignorant and easily gullible, they never look at the positive side. When a person's faith in the moral basis of life comes from that faith. Now, of course, it depends upon what you're being taught, who's teaching it, but what you got to understand, there's a lot of different reasons a person wants to be involved in a particular religion. But where I grew up, it wasn't about what they learned sitting in the pews and singing. It was about the social system of staying connected. Just on a separate thought, I was watching last evening the foolishness of people within the Democratic Party who are just going full out to make sure that every one of the important positions is held by a person that's anti-progressive. Yeah, I posted stuff on this so you can read it. And as if they don't want Bernie to win at all costs. Obama doesn't. No one does. Because Bernie wouldn't be the lapdog or the obedient savant that people such as Barack Obama were. Now, he has a lot of legitimate populist views. He has a lot of issues I would challenge him on with his foreign policies. At least he stood up for the Palestinian people yesterday in a discussion or over the weekend, something no one else would do. And there I am thinking, wow, they're going to end up causing a crisis at the convention, which will allow Hillary Clinton to come back in. Let's just see if that works out or not. Because she's not doing all that she's doing everywhere she can do it, unless she was trying to make an end run. Here's what very few people understand. If for any reason they undermine, either legally or illegally, Bernie Sanders from getting the nomination, you're going to see Bernie Sanders supporters, a lot of them, going over and voting for Trump. They did it the last time. People are not aware of that. They think it's just redneck, toothless, you know, inbreds, deplorables from Louisiana that voted for Trump. Not true. Trump had no chance in the world of being elected, had over the last 60 years, Democrats actually, and Republicans actually, did what they were supposed to do for the working class and the unions. Now, I travel all over this country, not just New York and L.A. and a few of the places where you have a lot of liberals who think they know more about life than they actually do. Go into the middle of America. Come with me down through Alabama, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Arkansas, middle of Ohio. Ask a person that's worked for General Motors for 30 years, then got laid off and hasn't worked in 20 years. He's got high blood pressure, diabetes, can't pay their bills, living on credit cards. And all the promises that were made by Hillary and Bill Clinton about NAFTA and how that person, so many others, lost their job and as a result lost their standard of living. And they are the woke group now, but for a different reason. And they were angry at the Democrats for all their lies, because what a person said during the campaign and what they delivered were completely opposite. The poor, the black, minorities, people of color, the unionists, were all betrayed by Clinton, by the other Clinton, and by Obama. So it was a protest vote. And they'll tell you that if you choose to listen to them. But if you're just castigating all of them as equal, 63 million people, then you've learned nothing. And everything they're doing right now, regrettably and unfortunately, could lead to Trump getting elected again. But if Sanders is undermined and they want an open convention and they don't play by their rules and they've stacked all of the important places at the Democratic National Convention just this last week, all with people who are warmongers, corporatists, neoliberals, they're perfect Clinton-Obamaites. Watch what happens to Bernie Sanders' supporters. They will go to Trump out of defiance against the corruption they see. Just a thought. Let's see what happens. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to come back, and what you're going to hear is a short discussion. It's only 4 minutes long, between former congressman who specialized in researching more than any other legislator the history of autism and the connection with vaccines, and Anderson Cooper, acting as if this person were a functional idiot. And then we will respond. Please stay with us.
To the human brain, and neurological problems have been caused by mercury, and mercury should not be in vaccines. My grandson got 9 shots in 1 day, 7 of which had mercury in it, and he became autistic in a very short period of time. We had scientists from around the world. Now, I'm for vaccinations.
Can you tell me the name of any of these scientists who claim this? Because they go against what every study, I mean, the CDC says this, Institutes of Health, all these studies say you're just wrong.
Well, I'll be very happy to provide those for you. I didn't bring them with me. But I can tell you, I was chairman for 6 years. 3 years we had these hearings, and we did have those studies. And there's no question that many scientists around the world believe that the mercury in vaccinations is a contributing factor to neurological problems. I'm for vaccinations, but we need to get the mercury out of all of them.
Well, are you against breastfeeding a child?
No, of course not.
Okay, but you are aware that methylmercury is actually in breast milk that's given to children. And in fact, the presence of, if a child is only breastfed, they get more methylmercury than they would ever have gotten in any of the vaccines. You're aware of that, right?
Well, let me just say I'm not an expert on breastfeeding.
Wait, so you hold hearings for 3 years and nobody ever told you that there's mercury in breast milk?
We never talked about that. What we talked about was the vaccinations.
Okay.
And mercury in vaccinations should not be there for adults or children.
Sir, you're aware that the kind of mercury that was in vaccines, which is no longer there, is different than the kind of mercury you get from fish, correct?
Let me just tell you.
Are you aware of that?
If you'll do your research, you'll find that any type of mercury injected into the human body can cause neurological problems.
Do you know what kind of mercury is in fish?
What are you talking about?
Well, there's different kinds of mercury. There's methylmercury, which is what's found in fish, which in high concentrations is toxic to human beings.
Right.
That's not the mercury that was ever in vaccines. You are aware of that, correct?
Well, all I can tell you is that if you'll talk to scientists around the world and look at the studies that we had before the committee, you'll find that they believe that mercury in vaccinations is a contributing factor to neurological problems, including autism. Now, we're for vaccinations.
I know you've said that, but a 2010 study by the CDC showed that there was no association between prenatal and infant exposure to vaccines that contained thermosal and increased risk for autism. In 2009, an Italian study showed that immunization with thermosal-containing vaccines does not decrease neuropsychological performance later in childhood. 2006, the FDA concluded there was no association between thermosol-containing vaccines and autism after reviewing evidence by the Institute of Medicine. I mean, the list goes on and on all the way back to 1999 when you were holding these studies. The FDA declared the use of thermosol in childhood vaccines poses no harm, and even out of an abundance of caution, they removed it, and the incidence of autism continued to rise.
You're a very bright young man, but I don't know where you're getting your information.
Well, it's called research. You could do it.
I did research for 3 years. Unfortunately, you haven't had the opportunity to research it for 3 years.
All right.
There's
no convincing evidence of harm caused by the low doses of thimerosal in vaccines, except for minor reactions like redness and swelling at the injection site. I got a list of dozens of studies. I could spend a long time just reading them to you, but I don't think it's going to make any difference. Hundreds of thousands of kids have been tested.
I will tell you this. You did not tell me you wanted me to bring all the studies, but since you're such an expert on these, I'll be very happy to provide you numerous studies that show that mercury is toxic and shouldn't be in vaccinations.
Okay. Well, it's actually thimerosal. And Anderson Cooper, for his audience, and being a very pro-establishment, pro-big pharma person, had an easy target. not such an easy target when you have facts on your side. Richard Gale. Richard, your opportunity to challenge the statements, all right, with Anderson Cooper.
Where do we begin? Timerosal is manufactured by Eli Lilly. So all the vaccine makers, when they purchase their Timerosal that they're going to be used in the vaccines, it's purchased from Eli Lilly. So you just go look at the material safety data sheet, which is required by the EPA for all chemical substances. And the data sheet itself, quote, is exposure to mercury, here being the ethyl mercury, the Timerosal, in utero and in children may cause mild to severe mental retardation, mild to severe motor coordination impairment. So that's right there by Eli Lilly, the makers and the sole provider of Timerosal in the United States. Cooper is trying to provide this argument, the difference between ethyl mercury, which is organic mercury, that's the mercury that's used in the vaccines, and methyl mercury. Methyl mercury being from coal power plants, from the tuna fish you eat, and other seafood, that would be the methyl mercury. That's inorganic mercury. The difference is that ethyl mercury, the Timerosal, does have about half a life than the ethyl mercury. So it remains in the body for a less period of time than the methyl mercury. However, it being organic means that it can pass the blood-brain barrier far more easily than can the inorganic mercury. So none of that was even raised. Researchers have observed that even when ethyl mercury is taken into the body, it makes the methyl mercury even more toxic and has an effect on the body's mitochondria, which is important for all of our cellular metabolic functions. I'm kind of surprised, given the amount of time that Dan Burton has spent on this, he could have even just gone to his own, referred to his own subcommittee's conclusions. The subcommittee for when they reviewed and pulled the CDC to review the autism-mercury connection, their final findings were, quote, to date, studies conducted or funded by the CDC, which we heard Anderson Cooper mentioning as if they were the Vatican. To date, studies conducted and funded by the CDC that purportedly dispute any correlation between autism and vaccine injury have been of poor design, they're underpowered, and they're fatally flawed. Another finding from that subcommittee. This is bipartisan. This is both parties. Quote, manufacturers of vaccines and Timerosal have never conducted adequate testing on the safety of Timerosal. The FDA has never required manufacturers to conduct adequate safety testing on Timerosal and ethyl mercury compounds. So that's both for the manufacturers and the FDA. Another finding by that committee. A growing number of scientists and researchers believe that a relationship between the increase in neurodevelopmental disorders of autism and the increased use of Timerosal vaccines is plausible and deserves more scrutiny. Anderson Cooper had mentioned the IOM. That was very disingenuous and basically a lie because the Institute of Medicine, quote, determined that such a relationship is biologically plausible, but that not enough evidence exists. Another finding, the FDC and the CDC failed in their duty to be vigilant as new vaccines containing Timerosal were approved and added to the immunization clinic. And as Senator Burton mentioned, there is a huge body of scientific studies independent of the CDC. He could have mentioned, because the paper that Anderson Cooper was referring to of the CDC showing no correlation between Timerosal and autism was the one that was done by Paul Thorsen, who we've spoken of many times here, and who is the fugitive, the FBI fugitive for having embezzled $1 million from the CDC. So he could have brought that up just to even discredit that. And that study's been thoroughly discredited. But
at the hearings, one of the legislators completely discredited Thorson's work when the woman who is currently at the CDC was testifying and asked, does she know of any research done that shows a correlation between MMR vaccines and autism? She said no. Well, that's an out-and-out lie. She perjured herself. First of all, the 41 studies done by this fugitive, Thorensen, were poorly designed, and when those were examined, none of those could be considered credible. So Anderson Cooper is using discredited information there. But also, we now know that Anderson Cooper is saying that the CDC says and the FDA says, in point of fact, the CDC was caught lying and engaged in cover-up when back in the early 2000s, right up through 2004, it published a study showing there was no correlation between the MMR vaccine autism when it actually was a 224% increase in autism with the MMR vaccine in African-American boys 36 months and younger. And the head of that study, a man named William Thompson, was so concerned that he got all the people's research, all their notes, and destroyed them except for one copy he kept. He then got a letter from a Professor Brian Hooker, whose own son was vaccine damaged, including autism. And instead of having the Freedom of Information Act request that Hooker was looking for information go through normal channels, he personally called Hooker. And he had a conversation with him. Conversation led to several other conversations. And then he let it slip to Hooker that it was his studies that proved there was a correlation and it was being covered up and it went clear to the top. That means Judy Gerberding, who would later leave the CDC and take a multi-million dollar job with Merck, the very company who's makes the MMR vaccine. Now, once Hooker realized that this man was saying something that was very important, he began to tape record him. Hooker gave us those recordings. We have used them in two separate documentaries, Silent Epidemic and Deadly Deception, where he acknowledges the CDC, all of them knew that it was causing autism. They covered it up. Had they published that, that means then that in Great Britain, the multi-talented group of gastroenterologists who were looking at a small group, 12 individuals with gastrointestinal disturbances, mitochondrial disturbances, who were diagnosed as autistic, and they were trying to see a correlation, and they published an article in The Lancet, a legitimate article, that would not have been reversed, and they wouldn't have been scandalized. And one of the people engaged in that scandal of slandering, one of the scientists, was Anderson Cooper. And it was CNN and their medical doctor that did the great slandering. And that could have prevented that from happening. So Anderson Cooper's on the wrong side of every fact here. Now, give us the fact. He made the mistake of stepping on his own petard here when he said that breast milk, you get, 53 to 56 micrograms of mercury, are you aware of that? And you don't get that from vaccines. That's completely wrong. We have the actual statistics. Share those statistics with our audience.
Those specific ones here, but more important, the mercury, the uptake of mercury in breast milk is the methylmercury. That's the inorganic. That's not the same as the ethyl mercury, unless the woman who's breastfeeding had received an injection or like a flu vaccine. It was 25 milligrams of thimerosal. Otherwise, there would not be that mercury, and likely in a pregnant woman or in a nursing mom of the ethyl mercury. During that committee, though, the committee hearing, subcommittee at the Congress, one of the doctors that was brought in to give testimony was the head of neurosurgery at Baylor College of Medicine. And what his presentation was that the brain tissues absorb the ethyl mercury 5 times faster than other tissues in the body, and that infants and small children are 5 times more sensitive to mercury's toxicological effects compared to adults. So none of that was really mentioned. Of course, if you are ingesting mercury through tuna fish, your body's already going to be excreting that through other biomolecular mechanisms compared to injecting mercury directly into the bloodstream. So that distinction was not really being made, but there was the study that did find that the amount of mercury that's from breast milk is far, much less than what it is.
The exact amount was 55 micrograms versus 5,000 micrograms from the actual injection of the vaccine versus breast milk.
Yes.
And one is not going to be absorbed, and the breast milk is going to be, whatever tiny amount there is going to be released quickly, but that which is injected is going to be there. So it's a major factor of difference between 55 and 5,000. That was completely left out of the discussion. Unfortunately, this is what the media calls objective reporting today. Here's something that I want to share with the audience. And this is going on all the time. This is from Ben Norton of the Gray Zone. And they do good work over there, by the way. The New York Times admits it sends stories to U.S. governments for approval before publication. The New York Times casually acknowledged that it sends major scoops to the U.S. government before publication to make sure, quote, national security officials have no concerns. Well, they've been doing that for a long time. And it's unfortunate that people affiliated with governmental agencies now are able to censor what is considered legitimate. The New York Times attacks people who challenge anything about vaccines, as does Facebook, as does Wikipedia, as does Google. So if you have the truth on your side, it's going to be censored, and it's not going to get the light of day. So we're trying to give some light of day. Richard and I have published over 52 scholarly articles on fully referenced on vaccines, and they're on prn.fm. I suggest people download them. We also have 4 award-winning documentaries, the latest being Deadly Deception. I suggest people watch it and share it with people so that there's another way of being able to have information at your hands that you can refer to. Thanks a lot, Richard. And we'll be having another major article on the World Health Organization later this week, and we're working on 2 right now. Now, we're going to go from there to this. This is an interesting story. Hundreds of current medical practices may be ineffective. It's called medical reversal. It's a term that defines instances in which new and improved clinical trials show that current medical practices are ineffective or misguided. New research reveals there are currently 400 medical reversals. Now, this is from Medical News Today. Quote, medical reversals occur when new clinical research shows that a certain medical practice does not, in fact, work, or it does more harm than good. These new studies are superior to their predecessors because of things like better controls, better study design, and larger sample size. Medical reversals all often concern medications, but they can also affect surgical procedures. And then it goes into details. Now, they examined 3,000 studies and in a meta-analysis. And that's what we have. So when someone tells you with certainty that a medical procedure is guaranteed or works or is scientific or proven, not so fast. Because here's 400 medical practices that have been reversed. We're going to go to that other clip right now. while time exists, because I want you to hear what Dr. Kenneth Stoller has to say.
For the most part, there is no autism. If you look at the definition in DSM-4, that's the psychiatric diagnostic manual for the definition of autism, you'll see that a medical problem running concurrent with the symptoms of autism makes that situation a non-autism situation. So autism, poor social interactions, obsessions, poor social skills, lack of eye contact, lack of speech, these things are the symptoms of autism. But if there is a comorbid symptom that's running along with it, a medical problem, then by definition, literally, that's not autism anymore. Most of the children that have been diagnosed with autism never receive any kind of medical workup, but those that do show all sorts of metabolic and toxicity problems. These medical problems include compromised immune systems, inability to detoxify, and nutritional deficiencies. So by definition, literally they don't have autism. The use of the word autism has been keeping affected children from getting treated for this environmentally triggered medical problem, actually a medically exacerbated environmental medical problem. Conventional medicine has a very limited approach to treating autism, focusing primarily on identification, speech therapy, and maybe a little ABA. Children on the spectrum who are higher functioning, such as those with ADD, OCD, and a host of learning disabilities, have the same medical problems that their more severely affected peers have, but never get any kind of intervention. And there's nothing wrong with ABA therapy, but you can't give this kind of behavioral therapy to a child with inflammation in their intestines who's suffering from severe pain and expect them to get better. So as cynical as it sounds, conventional medicine has very little to offer children on the spectrum, except to see a speech therapist and have a nice life, with the caveat that they do have psychoactive drugs to offer these children, and 70% of children who have autism are put on psychoactive drugs, despite the fact there's little to no scientific evidence that these drugs will assist them. There is some evidence that drugs such as Risperidone and Abilify will help children with repetitive behaviors, but at what cost? Because they can cause serious side effects such as muscle tremors and breast growth in boys and weight gain. There is a striking disparity between the number of children who are being drugged who have autism and the strength of the scientific evidence supporting the use of those drugs. The popularity of drugging children with autism is easy to explain. Conventional medicine has nothing else to offer. Pharma controls the minds of those in the medical community, and the medical community prescribes what pharma has on the shelves for them to prescribe. Since pharma plays a role and continues to play a role in the causation of the autism epidemic, they have done nothing to help facilitate appropriate treatment. Pharma is still causing autism to break out all over the world because one of the key triggers is the heavy metal exposure that children receive from vaccinations, specifically mercury. And the vaccines that are exported to third world countries have the full complement of the mercury-laden preservative thimerosal in those vaccines. No one holds pharma accountable for what they put in vaccines or verifies what they put in vaccines. And they have complete immunity for whatever happens to those who receive those vaccines. Some of the ingredients that we know are in vaccines are heavy metals, aluminum, mercury, MSG, and aborted fetal tissue. chopped up cancer cells. But some of the things that are not on the label include reverse transcriptase and retroviruses that are known to cause cancer in animals. So what ends up happening, if you happen to be unlucky, is the DNA from those retroviruses get written into your own DNA by the reverse transcriptase. The Supreme Court's recent opinion said that vaccines are inherently dangerous. Unfortunately, they also ruled that vaccine-injured people cannot seek compensation for their injuries through the legal system. In a recent article in the Journal of Immunotoxicology entitled Theoretical Aspects of Autism, a retired senior scientist in the pharmaceutical industry, Helen Radicek, did something that no one has ever done before. She reviewed the entirety of the medical literature on autism going back to 1943. She found in her research that there wasn't just one theory that the MMR or thimerosal caused autism. She found that all the theories suggested that they cause autism. Prevailing medical opinion scientifically links vaccines to encephalopathy or brain damage, but not scientifically to autism. And that is because it serves certain factions to hide the fact that
That's Dr. Ken Stoller. He has another 10 minutes, and you can hear that on PRN.FM. What we're showing in all the articles, the documentaries, the demonstrations, the reports, is that the certainties we were given that vaccines are safe and effective simply cannot be supported by the scientific evidence, no matter how persuasive a journalist may be in making an argument to the difference of that. We have found that the testimony of parents should be accepted because they know their baby better than anyone else. And unfortunately, at this time, the media does not respect the parents, actually condemns them. We're about out of time. I want to share something, however. I received two letters in the last 3 days from scientists well known, high up in the medical community on anti-aging medicine, complimenting the first phase of the clinical study that we did on anti-aging. And now they want it to be duplicated to meet the gold standard, and we are working with them to make sure that the scientists that they're affiliated with, over 50,000 scientists, I might mention, in anti-aging medicine alone from one group, are going to be monitoring this. They're going to have people on the ground there to watch it. So we start March 22nd. A lot of people would love to come but can't get away. So what I ask, and I got the okay, can we do a control group that doesn't actually come to the campus down in Texas for 60 days, but rather does it from their home for 60 days, as long as we put in place proper monitoring, like every day persons watching all the lectures, all the workshops from their home versus Skype on a special system that we are constructing. So a person wouldn't be there to do something, they would have to do their workouts, and then they'd be reporting to us on a daily basis. They agreed to that, as long as we had another group who was there to compare the two, meaning two groups of people. One is on campus, one is at home. They both have the same identical protocol, but one does it under constant supervision, another does it at home. They should have the same outcome. It'll be interesting to see if they do. You know, it also reduces the overhead, which is very expensive for me, and paying for all this stuff that I have to pay for and what a person would pay for themselves. So here it is. We have three spots left for people who want to do the anti-aging study, 60 years old and over. We are doing a small group of 10 who are 40 to 50, 50 to 60, to see is if a younger person can show the same biological marker improvement at a younger age, then that means they could forestall or prevent almost all the diseases that we call aging-related diseases later in life. But those are subgroups to the main study. The main study is 60 years and older. And one group's going to be there with me and our staff, and the other will be doing it from their home. So if you want to do it from your home, I believe we're full for the people being there in person, but if you want to do it from your home, you can call Luann to see if it's right for you. Luann Panessi's phone number, and you have to speak with Luann in order to be able to come there, because she has to screen everyone. 903-881-7008. All right? 903-881-7008. This way you'll do the study, but you'll do it from your home versus the people who are going to be there on campus. You'll have the same protocols. You'll have the same insights. You'll have the same lectures and the same instructions. We are working on the technical aspect of all that with video conferencing, etc. Exciting time. And if we're able to duplicate the results, then as one of the people said the other day to me on Saturday, Gary, if you can do it again, then you have met the gold standard and you will have done as important as Bannister breaking the 4-minute mile, and it will change forever the idea that people have to get old and die and become infirm and lose their muscle and their hormones and testosterone and estrogen. You will reverse all that. You could save millions, tens of millions of lives and quality of life of hundreds of millions. So now we're on to it. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.